So, as was just said, the title for today is Acquisition of Spiritual Knowledge. And the for January, the overall topic for the month was the path of spiritual evolution. And we'll find out during today's class that one of the ways to obtain evolution is by acquiring spiritual knowledge. That is our progress. That's our goal. To start off, we want to just put forth three definitions that we just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. The first one is, what does acquisition mean? And acquisition is the learning or developing of a skill, a habit, or a quality, something to acquire. Spiritual. Anything spiritual is beyond our senses. It is considered to be direct perception, self-awareness of truths not understood by senses. And that's an important distinction, that it has nothing to do with senses. It's a self-awareness of truth. And that which is identical with the supreme interconnection of everything. And lastly, knowledge. The philosophical idea of knowledge is something that is true, justified belief, certain understanding, as opposed to opinion. Now, in regards to acquiring spiritual knowledge, we do need to understand that in regards to man's sevenfold nature, that all of the acquirements of spiritual knowledge does affect all the pieces, so to speak, of our sevenfold nature. And everything is in, when we take in the spiritual knowledge, it affects everything from inward and to outward. That is how these forms develop from the inward spiritual experience. And all knowledge, all spiritual knowledge is accumulated and carried on from life to life. It is something that is stored in buddhi, which is our intuitive process. You know, what is the important part of our nature is buddhi. And it's carried on, as we said, from life to life, and it is expressed through the impulse of karma. So, what is then spiritual knowledge? The definition we had initially about beyond our senses, direct perception, etc., is part of the answer. But the easiest and most complete method to explain what spiritual knowledge is to discuss the idea of the I and the heart doctrines. The I doctrine is for the crowd. It is the exoteric teachings. It is the embodiment of the external, and it is only partial knowledge. And this, we can find this in the Voice of the Silence. The doctrine of the heart, on the other hand, is for the elect. It is the esoteric teachings and is the embodiment of divine wisdom. It is permanent and everlasting. Someone who is in touch with the I doctrine says, "Behold, I know." And this involves the intellect and no heart quality. Whereas the doctrine of the heart, then, one who has connected with that, they say in humbleness, they have garnered and they confess, thus have I heard. So, all, to go on with what can be found in the Voice of the Silence, we talk about the non-permanence of human action. It is deliverance of the mind from thraldom by the cessation of sins and faults, and these are considered to be not for deva egos. So the doctrine of the heart says this, that it is not for deva egos. The dharma of the eye is the embodiment of the external and the non-existing. The dharma of the heart is the embodiment of bodhi, which is the permanent and everlasting. The knowledge of our higher nature is identical with the supreme, giving us an interconnection with all. This is where we come up with the idea of universal brotherhood. Now, one way to really understand this idea of spiritual knowledge is to compare, so to speak, or even bond together not only these ideas of the heart doctrine and the eye doctrine, but the ideas of renunciation and liberation. Renunciation can be said to go along with the heart doctrine, whereas liberation then can be looked at as going along with the eye doctrine. And we do want to read something written by a student. So when we look at this idea, the path of liberation, it leads to nirvana, which in many respects, most people would say, isn't that what we want to do? Is go to nirvana. And this path of liberation lifts us out of the world of suffering and the world of conditioned existence. It is considered to be like an infinite ocean of unconditioned non-existence, which is a mouthful, the vanishing point of differentiated matter. But then there is the other path, a path which seems unappealing and uninviting to the majority. This is renunciation. The few who tread this path do so because they have come to realize the selfishness of the other. So then renunciation is looking at the selfishness of liberation. How can they enter joyfully and triumphantly into nirvana and leave the teeming masses of the poor, suffering, ignorant humanity behind? How can they jump into the ocean of bliss when they know full well that their fellow souls are trapped and helplessly sinking into the swamp of pain and despair? We can look at this as being the sin of separateness. To do so would not be an act of compassion, it would not be an expression of love, it would not be a recognition of the oneness and unity of all life. So when we're looking at these this idea of liberation and renunciation then, and we go along with the heart and the eye doctrine, then the heart doctrine is compassion. It is love, and that is what renunciation is, compassion and love for our suffering brothers and sisters. So now that we have an idea of what spiritual knowledge is, how does it affect us then? What is the purpose of acquiring spiritual knowledge? And to just say it bluntly, succinctly, it is for the growth of the soul. And the growth of the soul is done because it has imbued in itself the spiritual knowledge. Our intuition becomes more aware of what is real. We begin to trust our intuition better. We begin to listen to the promptings of it, and we can follow through on what we feel is the correct way to go. And by focusing on our higher nature, we are better able to help and teach others. To quote, "For and as the self of all, and give service to all." Soul knowledge is expressed by understanding the needs of others, rejecting no one, ignoring no experience, but seeing the significance in all. By identifying with none of it, but learns from all. The goal is to unlock, to access the higher plane of existence, become more perfect than at present. And the thing is, we may not become perfectly perfect in this lifetime, but we can become a little bit more aware of the possibility that we can become perfected. And we begin to learn our soul powers, love, compassion, clairvoyance, clairaudience, those type of things. We begin to become aware that they are a possibility, but they cannot be forced. We have to obtain that spiritual knowledge in order to put forth these ideas of spiritual powers. So when we speak of acquiring then spiritual knowledge, but truly, who or what is actually doing that acquiring? So when we look at the sevenfold nature of man, we're looking at the four lower, the quaternary or quaternary, depending upon how you want to pronounce it. And it's the we start out with the body, the astral body, prana or the life force, and then we have the passions and desires. And then we, of course, we have the higher three, mind or manas, intuition or buddhi, and then atma or spirit. So when we're the mind, then is it's one, but it can act from a lower or a higher level. So the lower is normally can be said as being more attached to the passions and desires. This is called the animal soul. So when we're looking at the lower mind, it is the contact point for the higher triad, and it connects to the lower because it is connected with the passions and desires. And it has to be able to do this in order to learn its lessons. These lessons are stored in mind, whether they be higher lessons or lower. And if the lessons are of a higher nature, they are stored in the higher mind and are stored in the immortal part of our nature. So then we can say that the this spiritual knowledge is acquired and stored in mind, depending upon if it's of a higher or a lower nature. If it's the spiritual knowledge, then it would be stored in higher mind and in our spiritual nature. The Gita says he should raise the self by the self. Let him not suffer the self to be lowered, for the self is the friend of self, and in like manner, self is its own enemy. Self is the friend of the man who is self-conquered. So self, like a foe, has enmity to him who is not self-conquered. So we know what spiritual knowledge is. We know where it's stored. We know where it is acquired. So how do we then acquire spiritual knowledge? First of all, we need to be aware that we have to do so. And we do that by facing and conquering our own simple human nature. We can meditate, we can study, and of course, by helping others. And what's interesting is that knowing the difference between the personality and the individuality. The individuality is that higher portion of us that constantly reincarnates. It goes on from life to life. Whereas the personality is the lower nature, and it changes with each life. And of course, doing one's duty makes way for further growth. It's like, you know, if we do our duty, it's like we're making room for further growth. And we cannot compare ourselves to others. We cannot look at somebody and think, oh, I wish I had what they had. Oh, you know, they're so much further along in their spiritual growth, that kind of thing. We have to focus on ourselves. We have to be content with whatever comes our way, do our duty as it comes to us without thinking of any sort of reward. Be self-restraint, self-denial, self-sacrifice for the examples of a spiritual life. So, what are the obstacles then of acquiring spiritual knowledge? A lot of it can be said to be coming from karma. We can be blocked by karma, and we can desire material goods. Maybe we don't want to get rid of, you know, the big house, the big car, that kind of thing. And also, interestingly enough, the knowledge of organized religion and science, they can interrupt the thoughts, those spiritual thoughts that we might have, and just put the spiritual attitude that we have aside. And also, because spiritual knowledge depends on our inner spiritual senses, by depending on the outer ones, looking at things from a superficial way. Finally, we always like to end our talks with practical ideas in regards to acquiring spiritual knowledge. And why should we? How can we? This is how we progress. This is the important part of our nature, is to try and encourage that spiritual part of us to continue to grow, to study, to help others, be compassionate, try not to depend too much on material things. So it is an important lesson we have to learn in regards to how we are going to live our life. And again, we can obtain a modicum of spiritual knowledge in this life. So we'll just read a quote as the end of our talk. It says, a truly spiritual person is full of contentment with whatever comes. By the power of rising above attractions and aversions, because he has done so, he is without envy. In daily life, we have to act. In the battles of existence, we have to accept a failure here and a defeat there, but we must do so by rising above the pairs of opposites so that we face with equal-mindedness success as well as failure. Face them with cheer and not with a whine. Let us overcome the two main obstacles. First, do not be passively resigned, but say cheerfully, now let me learn what this particular karma has to teach. Next, do not be afraid to act. Do not try to run away from the field of duty. The Gita teaches that by acting, by doing our duties, the fetters of destiny, the bonds of fate, the chains of karma fall away. Very few obtain the sight of the heart because they do not educate themselves. Heart perception is what we have to obtain, and growth of the self is marked by that perception of the heart. As long as we do not obtain self-perception, we are infants crying in the night, crying for the light, and the end of life comes ere we have found that light. So that is the end, and we will accept any questions here in Theosophy Hall.
We're wondering where that quote came from that you just read. Do you have a reference for that?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Yeah. All right. Well, the question is, that passively resigned. It was said that we should not be passively resigned. Is there such a thing as being actively resigned? We were just wondering if one would think that there must be its opposite, and then what would actively resign be? It almost sounds like an oxymoron, but it must exist if passively resign or not.
We
don't know. We're confused.
We think that being actively resigned would be a situation where just kind of give up, but you're doing it consciously. It's like if something's really hard and it's like, oh, I'm just not going to bother anymore with it. Whereas with passively resigned, we would think would be you're not even realizing you're giving up. Maybe has a little bit of depression to it where we wake up in the morning and it's like, I'm just going to stay here.
Well, would actively resign these perhaps somebody who wants to be a great singer and really loves music, but they realize that they've tried for many years and they just don't have it. So they concentrate on other things. Would that be actively resigned? It's after many attempts at success, but realizing that their karma for this life is not to be a great singer.
Well, that's interesting because since karma was brought up, we wonder if somebody's talent is being blocked by karma and they keep trying and trying and trying, maybe after a while they just kind of give up on it. And we now that it would be hard to say if they give up because they keep trying and trying and nothing ever works. Would that be active or passive? JCS?
A key concept to resignation is detachment. And the philosophy in many, many ways teaches that we should detach from the fruits of our action. So active resignation is an awareness of certain skandhas or bundles of tendencies or desires, if you will, recognizing them, seeing that as a trend in a character, and then actively working to detach from the fruits of action. Actively saying, okay, I'm aware of this, I witness this, I see this, I'm going to proceed in this particular line of action and see what happens, but I'm not going to be downcast or whatever. Inherent in that process, I think, is something in the voice of the silence on page 32, both action and inaction, action and passivity, may find room in thee, thy body agitated, thy mind tranquil, thy soul as limpid as a mountain lake. So we place our point of view of the witness, either in an extremely universal assimilation point of view, or we keep our mind as peaceful as possible and observe what might be going on in that lower nature of body and psychic and energy and desire. We
Thank
can go
you.
Flow and just still be self-centered.
Thank
or
you.
We can go with the flow and be selfless.
SL.
We could also look at that duality from the perspective of the three attributes or gunas spoken of in the Bhagavad Gita. It speaks there of the tamasic, which is indifference, inertia. And that could be the passive resignation, just giving up, as was mentioned. And then we have the rajasic relating to the principle of desire. And here it's more active because we give up the personal desire for beneficial results from action. So that requires an active effort to renounce personal desire. And then the higher would be sattvic. It's also an active, but we do the best according to the true perception we have, but resign or give up. Let's say resign to the law, do the best we can and leave the results resigning to the rule of law or karma. And both of those require more active application of the mind.
Yes, it's a very interesting, like a dichotomy of active and passive. And the awareness, we think, of both of them and how we can react in both situations, we think is an interesting idea in regards to gaining spiritual knowledge, because the more we're aware of what we're doing, self-knowledge, that is one of the ways we gain spiritual knowledge, is by becoming aware of what we're doing, how we're doing, and why we're doing. SL?
Towards the beginning of the talk, it was mentioned how the acquirement of spiritual knowledge affects all our principles. And we were wondering if that could be perhaps mentioned a little bit more, how the acquirement of spiritual knowledge, for example, affects the lower quaternary or the personality or the vehicles we use.
Yes, well, it happens in a way that that spiritual knowledge, when it talks about, you know, raising you know, the self by the self, and we're looking at the small spelling of self. And by raising up the higher nature, that is affecting that lower as well, because of all the lives that are in our body. And we know that it is the human that, in regards to the lower kingdoms, we are raising them up. Well, the same thing is happens with the human body, that we have all the lower kingdoms within us. And by bringing up this spiritual nature, we are affecting all of our characteristics. And it is said in the philosophy that however our higher nature is, we are, it affects from within outward. We make our these bodies from lifetime to lifetime. It happens through our higher nature. It affects it. So we are affecting our lower nature. All, you know, we have animal, vegetable, and mineral in this form, and we are affecting it at all times. If anybody else wants to add anything to that. We can start on a new topic then. Yes, in Theosophy Hall.
What is meant by the saying attributed to the teacher around the teacher known as Jesus about the kingdom of heaven is taken by violence? That sounds Is that what does that mean?
The kingdom of heaven is taken by violence. Does anybody want to comment on that? SL?
Could we relate that to the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? The battlefield there, which represents the human condition?
TK?
When the human being inwardly moves toward raising the self by the self, in certain ways, doesn't that set up conflicts between his lower self and what it wants, with the higher self and who and which knows what is the better, which is better than what the lower self wants? And so in time, the only way it can work is for the lower self to make the decision to get in line. And until that happens, there's going to be conflict.
Yes, there's a conflict between that higher and lower mind. So when, and as the first comment about the Bhagavad Gita, which we know is actually a play on words regarding the higher and lower mind. So in regards to what Jesus says, then the kingdom of heaven is taken by violence. We can look at the kingdom of heaven as being that higher aspect of us, so that there is a war going on. And we all can experience that in our daily lives, that we want to do something, but we don't. And is it for the good of all? Oh, maybe not. But, we always have that that war going on in our minds. MDW?
And that's why it's called the Book of Devotion. Because we are, it seems that devotion is an inherent quality in all of humanity. And we look around the world and everybody's devoted to something. Mm-hmm. So the question comes down to, what are we devoted to? Eating, sleeping, and we can go through our daily activities, but what about our mental activities? What about our feelings? And, so we go through self-examination to try to find that self. So there's constantly a battle going on.
One of the things that that did come out in the talk had to do with our fighting, trying to find who and what we really are. And by knowing that we are spiritual beings, we can certainly determine that the way that we need to progress, if we are devoted to that idea that we, as well as everything else, the animals, plants, we are all spiritual beings. And we need to be able to devote our lives to that. MDW, follow up?
But isn't that the point? We are all devoted to something right now. All of us. And what is it that we are devoted to? This is, we capture ourselves and we look at ourselves. And what are we truly devoted to? And, so... The Gita only gives us a framework in which we can create better circumstances and better karma for ourselves.
It looks like we have a chat and then we have a hand. Should our goal be nirvana, or our goal should be in the renunciation of nirvana? Well, the thing is with nirvana, most people think, oh yeah, that's where I want to end up. But renouncing nirvana gives we are then able to help our younger brothers. In nirvana, we're not able to do that. And so we do want to renounce going to nirvana so that we can stay back to help and teach others. Does anybody have any addition to that? Okay, so we have a hand, VW.
Greetings, everybody. In someone, feel free to correct this opinion or perspective. In the seed of consciousness, the ancient mind, we need compassion for relationships, control for schema, discipline for people. So follow, per se, the law of divine oneness, which highlights the interconnectedness of all things beyond our senses, which includes the animals and plants, because what separates us, that we all essentially need food as living things, is that we humans have the ability to reason, unlike plants and animals. And so the mystery schools want to convey or pass along about the basic principles of life. And we're sleeping, we're dreaming, and we're under our hypnosis or auto-hypnosis, which is self-incurred. While sensing or perceiving what brings us to nirvana or self-knowledge, that connection leads us to seek a spiritual knowledge through humility, so we can be taught, which is opened by compassion. The mystic mind, and not the philosophic mind, is mute, and the experience is incommunicable. So it's imperative to delve into language or into personal intelligence to reach the manas, thus the lower manas of the two, which one is the higher manas in itself, where language is. And then we're able to think about the world, and compassion is there, and so is humility. Manas is not our final goal, or rather a tool. And so the mystic mind needs to acquisition the manas, which is human. So etymological sense is understood and per se is related to the voice of silence, which is almost full of paradoxes or things that are either both or either true or false or true and false. And the difference between knowledge of self or manas, which is human, and spiritual knowledge depends significantly on where in state of consciousness the reincarnate is, with the goal in perspective in light of having urges to either be forthgoing or to return. This means the human can be concerned with existence and the connection with the whole universe, which is the basis of knowledge, spiritual knowledge. If I'm
so so we're actually looking at the idea of compassion and love, and the higher aspect of compassion and love can be found in higher mind, and that will follow along with us from life to life. And not only for the human kingdom, but also, as was said, for the lower kingdoms, that compassion and love needs to be applied to the lower kingdoms as well. MDW.
But in that lower kingdoms, we still have this urge, this urge to be devoted. We devote it like a mother to a child. That we that is an innate feeling that we have. So it's not devotion to a thing or place. It's a devotion to life and the oneness of it. So you know, there's many ways of approaching this, but the philosophies, you know, that we're all a part of one great whole, and what makes us or blocks us is our personality. And the Theosophy says the best guard against that is try to be impersonal in our speakings of these higher matters. And we will all benefit from that exercise.
Yes, when we look at our declaration, it speaks of universal brotherhood. And we know that we are all aspects of that deific essence, and that's what binds us all together in a unity. We look at the idea of unity in diversity, because there is so much, you know, the differences in the world, but yet we're all sparks. You know, we are lit up to different degrees, but we all are one. We are all unified. And the idea of universal brotherhood permeates everything, so that the idea of compassion and love, this is one of the ways we can progress in regards to spiritual knowledge. SL?
In the ordinary acquisition of knowledge, it is important to have a teacher, but not necessary. One can go to books, listen to tapes, all sorts of ways. But the idea is that the teacher informs us or gives us information that we didn't know before. In acquiring spiritual knowledge, though, what is different there about the teacher and our relationship to the teacher if we want to acquire spiritual knowledge?
Well, we guess that it would depend. Are we talking about like an elder brother or just somebody we know knows more than us? MDW?
Well, isn't life our teacher? That everything in life that we encounter is meant to teach us or to resolve it or to bring it back into harmony. So life becomes our, where we manifest our ideas.
TK?
Perhaps a useful analogy would be, you know, as far as being informed as opposed to actually pure spiritual knowledge, like the acquisition of it is really just for years, people will take music lessons to play the piano. And the better the teacher is and the harder the student, the more the student practices and becomes one with the music, he becomes technically proficient in playing the piano, but being truly a musician, an artist, comes from letting go of that teacher and moving into that place where everything that you're doing is more of a an evolution, a self-driven evolution. And of course, you're grateful that you had the instruction and the experience with that teacher, but the student has to take it on 100% for himself and move forward with it.
Yeah, it does take the student effort. They have to put forth the effort in order to learn it. And no matter how good a teacher would be, if the student isn't putting the effort into it, that student isn't going to go very far. We have a few minutes left. MDW?
So here's where we find ourselves. And I guess it's the old saying, be here now, because the only reality that exists is this very moment. Now it's, that moment is the past. And before we know it, we'll be in the future. So it's really being present and being present to your feelings, present to your actions, and present to your connection to each other. But you can only do that in the present.
And by focusing on the past, then the wrongs that were done, perceived to oneself or not, can always hold back from living in the present. TK?
Yeah, the thought comes to mind, just to take that analogy another step further, is when the young musician discovers how inspiring it is not just to play by himself outside of the instruction of the teacher, but to play with other young musicians together. They all, literally by testing, checking, and verifying with each other through music, they all become better musicians together.
Yes, working together. Well, our time is up for today. I want to thank everyone for being here. And we are thankful for Zoom because it's really cold out today. So we could all join each other on technology. Thank you.